More inflation is coming now that we have a $1 trillion infrastructure bill. Should you be worried? Or are all the experts wrong? All that and more on today's show. I'm your host, Steve Van Meter, and thanks for joining me today as we dig into the question, are infrastructure bills inflationary? Should you be worried? Our prices are headed higher? Perhaps everybody's wrong. Let's pick this story up and see where we go. As the Senate passes a $1 trillion infrastructure bill, handing President Biden a bipartisan win, that's a good thing. Anytime you see a bipartisan victory, both sides should celebrate, because the approval came after months of negotiations and despite deficit concerns, reflecting the appetite in both parties for a long-awaited spending package. And what do we see when it comes to federal infrastructure spending? Well, it doesn't always happen, but it does come in bursts. And you can see here, coming out of the late 90s into the early 2003, what do we see? Infrastructure spending. And what do we have here between 2006 in 2009, and now we're projected to get more. And what is the broad view is that infrastructure bills are inflationary and that somehow interest rates are going to rise and all these things are going to happen because consumer prices are going up just because the federal government spends some money out into the economy. And yet the federal government is spending money out in the economy all the time through Social Security, Medicare, military. And if it was just as simple as an infrastructure bill that would create inflation, well, perhaps we wouldn't even need the Fed. And well, we're going to talk about them today too. So the question remains, does infrastructure spending lead to inflation? Well, it's not just the Feds that spend money, it's also the states. Check this out. As you can see, total infrastructure spending, when you bring in state and local governments, and guess what? They follow the same pattern and timeline for the most part of what the Feds are doing. So let's take a look at the Consumer Price Index, because we had infrastructure bills going back between 2000 and 2003 where we saw a massive amount of spending. And well, lo and behold, we saw disinflation here on the year-over-year rate of change of the Consumer Price Index. How about 2006 to 2009? Well, here's 2006, here's 2009. So we did see some inflation for sure. We saw consumer prices rising, only to completely come crashing down. So is there enough evidence at this point to suggest that this is going to be inflationary or not? Well, not yet, but let's keep digging, because when you do see inflation, well, there's knock-on effects. There's other things that sort of happen. In fact, even President Biden has weighed in on what his thoughts are. And let's take a look. He said, the White House says its plans will slow inflation. The big question is when. And as you just saw, that it's really a mixed bag. There is no direct correlation so far to inflation and an infrastructure package. The Biden administration has argued that its infrastructure and broader economic package will slow rapid price increases, but that will take time. And of course, what is his argument? It's really simple. It's going to put people back to work, even at a point where we have almost 11 million job openings. So it's really not the issue there, but that is the hope that we'll get the supply chains moving again and get all these goods and services sitting at ports back on the shelves. And that should curb inflation a bit. But is it really part of a bigger debt issue of why we don't see inflation? Let's take a look, because in this chart here, we've got federal debt and as of total public debt against the Consumer Price Index, and you can see they both, well, tend to rise. In fact, the Consumer Price Index is relatively steady, and you can see as government debt started to increase, perhaps it looks like even the Consumer Price Index started to slow its rate of growth. But there's one easier way to look at that, and that is by flipping total government debt upside down and putting it against the Consumer Price Index on a year-over-year basis. And what do we see? As total government debt increases, well, notice how it's put a kind of a floor or a ceiling on inflation. It just can't seem to rise. Now, you might remember a few weeks ago, we interviewed Dr. Lacey Hunt, one of the foremost experts on monetary policy and treasury market and inflation, and he said government debt is too big of a problem, and that leads to economic underperformance, as unproductive debt does not generate a cash flow. And that's what you start seeing here, that these infrastructure bills, while they're great and they do good things in terms of replacing roads and bridges and key things we need, as far as the debt, if those projects do not create a cash flow out of it, the debt becomes unproductive and leads to further disinflation as the economy gets crushed under the weight of too much debt. But there's some other problems that come from this, and that is our friends at the Fed. And here we see Fed may need to consider a faster taper now that officials are saying the Federal Reserve may need to consider speeding up the reduction in its bond buying program amid strong economic growth and rising inflation, the two members of the central bank's board said recently here on Friday. And the economy is in a very strong position. End quote. There is upside risk to inflation. So what you're seeing here already are Fed officials getting nervous about inflation. Now today, as we record this, Fed Chair Powell was renominated by President Biden. So we'll assume that we're going to continue to see a balance sheet taper, possibly even an increase as the president gives his nod to the Fed chair. Well, let's continue on and see what these members of the Fed say. Federal Reserve Vice Chairman Richard Clarida said in a virtual appearance that when it comes to the possibility of speeding up the drawdown in the Fed's bond buying stimulus effort, quote, I'll be looking closely at the data that we get between now and the December meeting, and it may be well appropriate at that meeting to have a discussion about increasing the pace of the pullback in asset buying at the coming Federal Open Market Committee meeting, he said. So what is he trying to tell us? That, hey, get ready. If things continue down the path, we will be looking to increase our taper early in the next year to attempt to control inflation. Let's keep going. Mr. Clarida didn't say that he favored such a step and affirmed. Yeah, so he said we might, but you know, he doesn't favor it and affirmed that any changes in the pace of asset buying would be set by the committee as a whole. Of course, it's always set as a committee as a whole, mainly the president and the chair and the vice chair. His comments followed those of Fed Governor Christopher Waller, who said in a separate appearance that a robust rebound coupled with mounting inflation problems increases urgency for a central bank to pull back on the stimulus to put it in place to deal with the coronavirus pandemic. Quote, for my part, the rapid improvement in the labor market and the deteriorating inflation data have pushed me towards favoring a faster pace of tapering and a more rapid removal of accommodation in 2022, Mr. Waller said in a speech to New York. The next few months will be critical in determining how the tapering process plays out, he said. And there you see the Fed is getting nervous because the Fed doesn't have a lot of credibility to begin with. But the one thing they claim to be able to do is keep control of prices. Well, it certainly doesn't look like it because, you know, in the Fed's view, monetary policy can do everything. But as we know, well, there's certain things it can do. Wait till I show you how this is going to play out. But let's finish up with what Mr. Waller said here. He said that ending the bond buying that expands the Fed's balance sheet should happen before raising rates. Well, that is obvious. That is good. We should do that. And doing swiftly gives the Fed options for when it can raise its now near zero short-term interest rate target. He said he would like to see the taper process done by the end of the first quarter. Now that is, in his view, faster than what Powell has announced that the taper would end at the middle of next year. Now, why is the Fed so eager to end the taper program and get rates off what's called the zero bound, above 0%? Because they have no ammunition for the next crisis. What happens if we roll over back into a recession? Rates, they can't lower the federal funds rate below zero. So what are they going to do? You already know the answer. QE will be back bigger and badder than ever. There's no other option for the Fed. They don't like that, and they're trying to get out of it. And also, of course, control inflation. You can have a rate hike as early as the second quarter if the taper was completed and the Fed decided that it was the right choice for interest rate policy, Waller said. Inflation pressures are becoming more widespread and may last longer into 2022 than I thought they would, the official said. And he's also concerned about rising inflation expectations held by the public. It is very concerning to me that households and markets are no longer expecting us to keep inflation near our 2% target over the next 3 to 5 years. And there you have the real story from the Fed. You've got this infrastructure bill that is believed to be inflationary. This is what the media believes. This is what experts believe. And now what is the problem is people are looking to the Fed and saying, hey, your 2% target, you're not doing it. And that causes a lack of credibility. Again, not that the Fed has a whole lot left to work on. But will the Fed be successful in actually curbing inflation? Well, let's get into some of these charts so you can understand what the Fed is going to do and how it will actually impact consumer prices. because I'm you're going to be surprised. Let's take a look at this. Here we have the consumer price index for all urban consumers on a year-over-year basis in blue. We have the monetary base, and this is the Fed's balance sheet. This is where you see QE show up. Those mortgage-backed securities, those treasury securities, they're all added into the monetary base. And we can go back and see QE1 right here, QE2 here, QE3 here. And now, of course, we have all of the pandemic QEs showing up in the monetary base. There was QE in here, but there were some other things going on that the Fed was unwinding. So it was kind of, it still caused their balance sheet to fall. Now, does this really tell us a whole lot? Because we can see, well, it looks like as the Fed expands, as the monetary base rises, it leads to inflation, but not necessarily, because here during QE3, it didn't really do it. So what is the truth? Well, we need to maybe look at the year-over-year rate of change of both. And now you start to see some symmetry. As the year-over-year rate of change increases in the monetary base, it does lead to some inflation here. But what happens when the Fed starts to slow or contract its balance sheet? What happens? Inflation goes down. And part of the reason has to do with the growth rate of the money supply. And we'll talk about that momentarily. But here you can see inflation rising and the Fed's balance sheet on a year-over-year basis was contracting. So there's, again, you know, some places there's a relationship, some places there's not. But the overall thought now is that if the Fed continues to slow the growth of its monetary base, that will lead to lower inflation, but not always. Let's take a look at what's really going to happen. And with that, we go to the M2 money supply and the monetary base, both now showing on a year-over-year basis. So what's going to happen as the Fed slows its growth rate of its balance sheet and presumably stops its growth rate of its balance sheet, bringing it down to zero, perhaps even negative? What will happen is the money supply growth will slow down and follow with it. And this is really key, because while the Fed cannot print money, and I want to be very clear, the Fed has no tools or mechanisms to do that, what they can do is cause the money supply to grow, because it forces people to deposit money in the commercial banking system. And which was what QE does, because QE takes customer deposits and through a process backs them by the Federal Reserve and moves them through the reserve system, the commercial banking system, and holds them at the Federal Reserve. So what happens is your deposit at a commercial bank could be backed by the Fed instead of normally a treasury. In part of that process, to do that, the Fed needs customer deposits. And it forces them by suppressing interest rates so low that you as a depositor have no other options that look attractive. So you put your money in the bank, causes the money supply to grow. But if the Fed backs off of that, what we see is options come available for depositors, and we see a slowdown in the growth rate of the money supply. Again, something Dr. Lacey and Hunt and I talked about. So if the money supply is now going to slow, well, what does that mean for inflation? Well, check this out. What it means now, if we take the M2 and now overlay the consumer price index on a year-over-year basis, when we see the M2 money supply growth rate start to fall, it does cause the consumer price index to slow down. Now, you can see post-pandemic, it shot up, but that's because we went from deflation and got back to some sort of normalcy. But what happens is, if there isn't enough money in the economy to support higher prices, consumers reject them because they can't afford them. And that's the key part I want you to take away from today's show. If you take nothing else away, I want you to take away that if the money supply is not growing fast enough to support higher prices, consumers will reject them and they're going to head lower. But so many people think that what we're doing is modern monetary theory. Well, let's take a look at that. Because not so. Modern monetary theory is in the future. It's here now. Important elements of MMT are accepted by much of the financial establishment, but markets aren't pricing it in. I'm going to take this whole article down to one piece and totally destroy it. It says here, money only exists because of government spending. Let me tell you for a fact, that is not true. The government does not create money, doesn't create money when it borrows it, doesn't create money in any way. Money is created through the commercial banking system when people borrow money. Since the government doesn't borrow from the commercial banking system, it can't create money. So MMT, not happening. It's not here today at all. But are there some other things that are going to put downward pressure on inflation? Let's keep going here, because when we see supply chain problems, slow signs of easing. Asian output is coming back, some bottlenecks are clearing, but labor shortage could persist into next year. So we're kind of seeing this into next year deal, right? You're seeing it with the Fed. You're seeing it with supply chain now. The number of ships waiting to unload at the ports of Los Angeles and Long Beach, the biggest U.S. gateway for imports from Asia, has improved, but is still hovering near record levels. There were 71 container ships anchored offshore on November 19th, down from a peak of 86 3 days before, according to the Marine Exchange of Southern California, and 17 more were expected to arrive within 3 days. Before the pandemic, it was unusual for any ships to anchor offshore, and now we're hearing from shipping and retail executives. They say expect the U.S. port backlogs to clear in early 2022 after the holiday shopping season, and when Lunar New Year shuts many factories for a week in February, slowing output. So again, now what we've got the Fed story, we got the money supply story, we've got the supply chain story, but what about the commodity story? Well, it's showing some signs too, and that is what we see here. From copper to corn, markets show peak inflation fear has passed. We'll take lumber, one of the biggest gainers among commodities in the past year, as stuck-at-home Americans poured money into remodeling. And they did. It slumped 40% since its peak in May. The booming housing market has also cooled, with an index that measures consumer plans to buy homes tumbling last month. And copper has eased from all-time highs. Here's copper. You can see not showing signs of inflation here in copper. How about we look at lumber, maybe more applicably referred to as timber, as it goes back down. Again, if you're not seeing inflation in these, where are you going to see it? How about corn? Price of corn has even come back down. But how about one of my favorite indicators, that is crude oil? We've got that on a year-over-year basis here. And you can see when crude oil on a year-over-year basis declines, because it's used in over 6,000 products that you buy, not to mention transport of those products, the production of those products is used all over the place, that when the year-over-year rate of change in crude oil comes down, well, that tells us that consumer prices will come down. Doesn't mean they're going to follow it immediately. It can be with a lag. It suggests us where consumer prices are headed. And as we talk about, this has nothing to do with an infrastructure package. Fertilizer also extends its rally, with some prices soaring near 60%. So what happens with fertilizer means that we're likely going to continue to see food inflation. Let's set that up, as we say, because there's work to see disinflation in some areas, inflation in others, but crop nutrient prices have been skyrocketing as energy pinch in Europe makes natural gas the main feedstock for most nitrogen fertilizer more costly. China and Russia are restricting nutrient exports to ensure sufficient domestic supplies. And this week, companies in Canada, a major potash exporter, are pursuing alternative shipping routes after flooding cut off Canada's third largest city from the rest of this country. And here you can see the fertilizer friendly, as the North American nutrient gauges surges to new highs. And what does that tell you if you're looking for inflation in the food sector? Well, fertilizer prices are a direct input into crop prices. So think higher crop prices coming in the future, and that will lead to inflation in food. But that has nothing to do with infrastructure. Nothing to do with infrastructure at all. And are farmers concerned? Well, they are. These surging costs for farmers are stoking concerns about already high food prices at a time when U.S. consumers have seen the steepest inflation since 1990, and people around the world continue to struggle with impacts from the pandemic. So there you start to see that due to the Fed's taper of the balance sheet, the money supply growth will slow. That will lead to less money in the system to support higher prices. We're likely to see food prices stick, but that could mean lower crude oil prices, could mean lower commodity prices, and that will lead to broadly overall lower inflation. But food prices, if they stay up, will pinch, unfortunately, those that have the least, and they need food. They have to bear that cost, and they're not going to be able to afford it, leading them to reject higher prices, perhaps substituting something they want to eat for something, well, that they need to eat. But is all this going to lead to the economic surge of growth that everyone's expecting? Well, let's head over to China, because they say something a little different is coming. And China's central bank advisor warns about quasi-stagflation risk. And what is he saying? China's economy could enter a period of quasi-stagflation with relatively slow growth and excessively high producer price inflation. Now, what I want you to be thinking is start substituting China for the United States, and you'll get an idea of what is possibly coming here. Let's continue on. Such a scenario is very likely if demand remains weak, producer prices stay high, corporate profits are squeezed, and existing risks in the economy are, quote unquote, released too quickly, he told in an online forum. Such possibility needs close attention. Once it happens, it will last into next year. So can the U.S. see slower growth with higher prices? And the answer is yes. You're seeing it with the Fed. That's what I wanted you to see. The balance sheet taper, slowing the money supply grow. So we'll have likely prices stick a little higher for a while, particularly in the food. But without the money supply grow, well, if you get slower in the economy, you get stagflation. And then that takes us over to Japan. Let's head over there. Why Japan appears to be immune to global inflation surge so far? Because Japan keeps consumer prices flat. It might be a sign of rigidities and that hamper growth. After decades of very low inflation, Japanese shoppers resist paying higher prices and businesses seldom try to lift them. Companies hoard cash and stint on investment, whereas in the U.S., they buy their stocks back and keep the labor market rigid so workers can't easily move to growing businesses and get pay increases. It isn't a recipe many countries want to follow, and those everyday low prices are part of a phenomenon economists call Japanification. Low inflation, low interest rates, slow economic growth that policymakers have tried years to escape. And guess what, my friends? The path that we are headed on is just as you see here in Japan. And when you look at a chart, you see they have very low inflation. Japan, they haven't seen sharp price increase in prices over the last 30 years, and that is likely coming to America in the future. Not right away, but it's coming. And with that, we'll wrap up today's show. Appreciate you for being a fan. Appreciate you watching. And with that, we'll see you back on Wednesday for the next show. I'm your host, Steve Van Meter. Thanks for watching. Bye now. The content of this video is provided as educational information only. It's not intended to provide investment or advice. It should not be construed as a recommendation or solicitation by or selling securities, financial instrument, or participate in any particular trading strategy. This video was prepared by Steve Van Meter. Personal capacity, opinions expressed in this video that do not affect the view of Atlas Financial Advisors, Inc. or Steve Van Meter Financial.